from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, we're talking about Islam. Why are millions of Muslims converting to Christianity? Also, Jeanette and writer Patty Armstrong offer a taste of the ways priests, who are also chefs, feed their flocks. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Sherry Waddell, studied Islamics and cross-cultural missions at the graduate level before entering the Catholic Church. Sherry is the co-director of the Catherine of Siena Institute and the author of Forming Intentional Disciples, The Path to Knowing and Following Jesus. She talks with Jeanette today about the growing number of Islamic converts to Christianity, something that doesn't get reported very often.
Sherry, it's so good to have you on Register Radio. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here, Jeanette.
You know, Sherry, just a couple weeks ago, you wrote a post or a commentary for the Register that got a lot of attention. It was probably one of our top posts for a couple of weeks, which is really amazing. And it was on, the title of it is, Why Are Millions of Muslims Becoming Christian? And it's really a fascinating topic. And I have to say, we asked you to write it because one of our editors had seen some of your writings on your forum, Intentional Disciples, Forming Intentional Disciples Forum on Facebook, and he saw some of your comments related to this there, and he said, well, she might have more to say on this topic. And so we contacted you and asked you to write on it, and sure enough, I mean, it was a hit with our readers. Sherry, how did you get interested in the topic of Muslim conversions?
Well, I was actually preparing to be a missionary to the Muslim world as an undergraduate when I actually became Catholic, that threw that into a loop because nobody, from a Catholic perspective, seemed to know anything about it. I'm from an evangelical Protestant perspective, and so I did my undergraduate degree in the modern Middle East in Arabic. I did graduate studies in Islamics, and then boom, right in the middle of that, I became Catholic, and so it sort of brought things to a screeching halt.
So this piece that you wrote for the Register, it is obviously chronicling something that seems to be quite new. You speak about millions of Muslims becoming Christian. What is the data? What have you seen? What exactly were you writing about?
Well, actually, it's a movement that is probably more like 40 or 50 years old, but it's been sort of watched over, and scholars in the evangelical world have been following this all that time. The latest figures that we have, and these are only rough estimates, again, because of the extreme sensitivity of this issue, because those Muslims who become followers of Christ and are living in a Muslim context, it's a very sensitive issue. The best estimates we have right now are there's between 5 million and 16 million what they call Muslim background believers in the world. That was as of 2010. That's sort of the last figures. There are other estimates we have out there. Maybe the best estimate is just short of about 10 million. What's really interesting is the U.S. is a magnet for these people. So we have roughly almost a 500,000 Muslim background believers living in the U.S., most of whom are evangelical Protestants. About 60,000 are Catholic, and another 40,000 maybe are Orthodox. But there's a lot of people. Just in many ways, the U.S. has the largest population that we know of in the West. Now, these are all very loose figures because of the persecution issues, but it's just been growing. And most of this has happened, what's really interesting, it's happened in the 21st century. Even though this has been growing over time, it is really accelerating right now. So that's part of what is so fascinating.
Sure. And why? Why? What are people saying about this acceleration? What is causing it?
Well, because it's mostly, at this point, it's largely this, if you will, Muslim background Christians who are evangelizing their own.
Oh,
it's not Western missionaries who are primarily doing this. These are people who have encountered Christ, who've had these dramatic conversions, seen God at work and are now sharing that with their family and friends and neighbors and things like that. So there's different pockets of this movement around the Muslim world. You know, there's sub-Saharan Africa is a big one, Iran, Bangladesh, places like that. So it's just an amazing thing. It really seems to have taken off in about 23 years ago. They started something called the 30 Days of Prayer for the Muslim World. This is a global evangelical prayer initiative that millions of people have participated in that were praying for spiritual awakening in the Muslim world. They do it every Ramadan. And in fact, it starts again. Ramadan begins on June 6th. So this campaign in 2016 is beginning on June 6th again. And it's just prayer for all dimensions of sort of their lives and their spiritual journeys in the Muslim world. But the growth of Muslim background believers corresponded to the development of this global prayer campaign. But there's been many, many people involved in this, many people who are doing really amazing, very creative, cutting-edge things and taking great risks to do so.
Sure. This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I am speaking with Sherry Waddell, who is the co-director of the St. Catherine of Siena Institute, but she is also the author of Forming Intentional Disciples, The Path of Knowing and Following Jesus. And we're talking about a commentary she wrote at the Register, Why Are Millions of Muslims Converting to Christianity? Sherry, you know, as we've talked about this, you've mentioned Christian organizations or Christian initiatives, usually evangelical Protestant initiatives. Are there specific Catholic initiatives or ways that the Catholic Church is working in this regard?
Okay, there are no, if you will, public initiatives that I'm aware of anywhere in the world, the Catholic world. There are, I think, individuals, you know, priests and religious and lay people who have friends in their life or people in their life who are coming and inquiring, and they're dealing with them in a private way. But there's no initiative like there is in the evangelical world.
And how could Catholics actually join that mission of prayer? Is there a place where we can go to find that petition, petition?
The 30 Days of Prayer for the Muslim World has a very extensive, very interesting website. You just go online and look for 30 Days of Prayer for the Muslim World. And they have all sorts of information about Islam around the world and, you know, sort of a daily guide during the 30 days. So I would strongly encourage people to take part in that. One of the things that people have suggested, what if Catholic parishes in the U.S. who had significant immigrant Muslim populations around them were ready and able to give out Bibles in the language of local Muslims, if we actually had prepared to do that, like in Arabic and Urdu and Persian or Farsi, Turkish, etc. So there's things we can do. We can actually realize there are lots of people out there, and some of them are very distressed by the developments in the Muslim world about sort of ISIS and those sorts of developments. And it's making them, they're longing for something else. And some of them are having dreams. This is a very common thing in the Muslim world. Dreams are taken seriously. And so people are having dreams of this glowing figure of a man, sometimes who identifies himself as Isa or Jesus. Sometimes they have visions of the Virgin Mary, sometimes of scripture, whatever. And then they go out and they're looking for someone to help them understand, you know, kind of what is happening, what this means. So there's, if we were aware that people we're hungry and we're searching out there, we could, I think some of us could really think this through. How could we be prepared to try and help them?
Sure. Sure. And your blog, your commentary gives some suggestions even further than the ones you just mentioned on how that might be done on the pastoral level, even at a parish. Those were remarkable tips for the structured community as well as each and every individual who is able to be prepared. So let's go over some of the ways that the church itself, the institutional, the parishes could be prepared.
Well, we have members of our Foreign Intentional Disciples Forums that have Muslims in RCIA, so there are real Americans, just ordinary Catholics who are wrestling with this right now. One of the things is for your diocese or your parish to have a plan, to think this through. What would we do? How could we help someone who is exploring, who wants to come and ask questions or maybe even ask for baptism? So what if there is a, what if you did have someone who came and asked? You need a private way to do this. You do not want to trumpet this around. Mm-hmm. You don't want to make stars of them, because there's often complications in their private life. Their families may mm-hmm. abandon them, you know, all sorts of things. Even though they're here in the U.S., there's costs involved. So you want to do it quietly. And what if you had people in your parish or in your diocese who had maybe some background in Islam, understood some of the basic issues involved, and could be, you know, could be the person that you would link this person to, this speaking Muslim to. And after they had talked with them and got a sense of where they really were, you know, you had a pulse, a way to even baptize them privately, if that would, you know, if that's appropriate. Mm-hmm. But most of us, and there are, for instance, in Michigan, we have the largest Arab population in the country. There's, you know, there's places in the country that have a lot of Muslim background people. And just sure. be praying, be open, and maybe have Bibles, as I said, in their languages.
Right.
And, you know, and be prepared for what if somebody was serious.
Absolutely. You know, Sherry, the fact that your commentary did so well at the Register site shows me how many people really are interested in this. So we will join you in prayer, and we will join and prepare in any way that we can. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Jeanette. Thanks for having me.
When we return, you know about priests who feed their flock well, but what about literally feeding them too? This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Patty Armstrong, is an award-winning author and was the managing editor and co-author of Ascension Press's best-selling Amazing Grace series. Patty talks with Jeanette today about priests who are also chefs.
Patty, it's so good to have you back on Register Radio. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So you wrote a story not too long ago that actually captured my interest greatly, because I like to cook and I like to eat and I like to have people over and just fellowship around a meal. And that story that you wrote were priest chefs feed their flock. Pastors say cooking creates community. And it's a story all about basically priests who have some form or some aspect of their ministry that involves cooking for people. It was a great story, Patty. Our audience loved it. Our readers loved it. And I certainly loved it. So let's talk about who these priests are and what their examples are. What are some of the priests you talked to?
You know, I talked to a lot of local priests. Cooking is huge around here, around Bismarck, North Dakota. And I think through the entire state, for our priests particularly. I talked to Father Justin Waltz. And Monsignor James Shea, who's the president of University of Mary, because what they started doing at St. Mary's High School is auctioning off meals. And I thought they thought it would be a fun way to raise money, but nobody expected how much money they would raise. They're selling these meals for thousands of dollars, $3,000 and $4,000
wow.
just for a meal. I think they usually have 6 to 8 people.
Yeah.
And I actually got invited to go with a couple who had bought one of these meals. We got invited. And, oh, my goodness, it was an amazing meal. But what they're finding, and I've talked to a lot of priests, I talked to Father Leo, who has the Grace Before Meals movement and has written 3 different books.
Right. He's also a host on EWTN.
Yes, absolutely, with Savoring Our Faith.
That's right.
The cooking
That's right.
program. And he said it so beautifully. He said people aren't paying for the meal. They're paying for the experience of spending time with their priest.
Right.
And he also sure. said he felt this was very important to note, that it isn't just about spending a lot of money for a meal. That priests can get together with their flock outside of you know, a fundraising effort.
Right.
And when I talked to Father Justin Waltz, he said, you know, we like to get invited over for a meal sometimes too, and we don't even care if you just order pizza. It doesn't have to be anything fancy.
Sure, sure. No, absolutely. I think that's exactly true. I think that's why I love the story so much, and our readers love the story, is because all of us, many of us, I guess I should say, enjoy the fellowship that happens around a meal. And to be able to have that fellowship with your priest or spiritual leaders, or even sisters, you know, nuns and brothers, it's something special. It creates an even more unique bond than the spiritual bond that we already have. I remember when Bishop James Conley was here in Denver as an auxiliary bishop, I was a part of a group of young people that he had gathered, and we would go have meals together maybe once a month, and we would pick a new, usually an up-and-coming restaurant to gather at and to have a meal, and all of us enjoyed the food. We were foodies, if you will, but and led by Bishop Conley. But it was a time of great conversation, and it sounds like that's what you tapped into for this article.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, I want to mention too, Father David Simonetti, or maybe it's Simonetti. He actually talked about how the meal moves us from I to we, and that he has a ministry where somebody who is hurting in some way, maybe they just found out they have cancer or they're experiencing a difficult time, and he will buy groceries, come over, cook the meal, clean everything up, and he loves to do that. He loves cooking. He loves cooking so much that he actually came up with these amazing pasta sauces, because I've tasted them myself, and they're called Communio sauces, and he has 4 different kinds. I know he's going to expand on that. And he's having them bottled and sold in the Frankfort, Illinois area, but you can actually go online too. And they're so good because they've got fresh ingredients. And the first ingredient on the label is love.
Oh, how nice. Yeah.
I thought that was...
Exactly.
He experiences cooking as love when he was growing up. And he says, you know, it's a way to get to go back home. It's a way back to the family. And even if maybe family life wasn't perfect, the beautiful part of the story for me were the priests all telling me, this is Eucharistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sharing a meal is what we do at Mass.
Right. Exactly. This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Patty Armstrong. We're talking about an article she wrote recently about cooking priests. The name of that article is Priests Chefs Feed Their Flocks. And you know, Patty, you mentioned just a few seconds ago about a priest who comes to the help of people who are sick by cooking for them or bringing them food. And we had another story just recently also in the Register about that very thing. It's an organization called Bene Plates, which is basically good plates. And it says, Bene Plates comes to the aid of cancer patients. And this is a group that has basically created a menu and a meal service for those who are suffering with cancer. And it's the same thing. It's so much more than a meal. It's a good meal. They provide a nutritious meal. But they also provide that care and that love that goes into cooking that meal, which you can't get in the cafeteria at a hospital.
And anybody, I have been on both ends, receiving and then giving meals and also heading up organizing meals for people. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you go the extra mile. You want it to be special, so you don't just, you know, slap together some meatloaf and a
right.
bag of french fries. you actually do put some love into it. You want them to truly enjoy it. Something you can do, whether the person has cancer or they just had a new baby, it's a way to show your love and your care for that person. And so to see that there's priests who are making a ministry out of this and recognizing, and I've got to tell you how I got the idea to do the story to begin with. A friend of mine, Teresa Waltz, has two sons, and they're both priests, and they both are amazing cooks. They've been to Italy. They know what good food tastes right. like, and they know how to make it. And she found out that there was a seminarian, Greg Luger, who's going to be ordained soon, who Father Justin was having him grocery shop and teaching him to cook. And she said, well, this isn't part of his, he's not supposed to be doing this as a seminarian. What are you doing? And he said, Mom, don't you realize he can use this skill as a fundraising
skill? Absolutely.
And when I talked to Greg later, he also talked about the importance of serving people and being at their level. And this was a way he could do that because he didn't know how to cook beforehand. Father Justin actually taught him to cook, and he said now he and his mom talk on the phone about recipes all the time. I thought that was pretty funny.
It's great. I mean, that's exactly it. It's something bonding, and it's also something that a lot of people can identify with because we all need to eat, and many of us love to cook. But it's also, I mean, I think I'm glad you point out that for seminarians, for priests, for religious, like the cooking nun who won on the Food Network Chopped. I mean, these religious can use this as a very human means of reaching people, and because that we all need sustenance, and so it really is, I think, a beautiful way of entering deeply into the lives of people, because I mean, amazing conversations can happen around the dinner table. And if it's not an amazing and deep conversation, it is a relationship building conversation. And that's huge when it comes
to
eating together, right? I mean, you are the mother of how many children, Patty? So you know very well what a meal can do for a family.
Right. And it is, you know, studies have shown that if you sit down and have a meal with your kids, they start doing better in school. They have less behavior problems. You know, there is so much that comes from that. And that's something that Father Leo really, really encourages. He said just a simple act of having a meal together every night can do so much for the family. Mm-hmm. It seems simple, but it's huge. And that's why, you know, I don't watch much TV, but my kids will turn on these cooking programs and I'll sit down and watch with them. And it's just, I don't know, there's something about it. Something about preparing meals, because we all have to eat, and we could just grab, you know, a bag of ramen and make it simple. but we all enjoy eating good food, but there's something that goes into the preparation. It's a craft. It's an art in order to create. And it also really is about relationship and love, too.
Absolutely. So there's another article I wanted to mention that the Register did recently. I don't know, Patty, if you've seen this book, but it's a book that's recently come out. It's the Vatican Cookbook. And the Register's story, it's by a Pontifical Swiss Guard. So it's written by a Swiss Guard, and he's himself is a chef. He has investigated in all of these different recipes that are in some way related to popes or to the Vatican. Our article is titled Cook Like a Swiss Guard and Eat Like a Pope. Have you come across this book yet, Patty?
You know, I haven't, and I saw the article. It definitely caught my attention because it came out right around the time I wrote this cooking article, and it is something that I do want to get.
Because it
makes it exciting and fun, and then it just really draws us into our Catholic faith, too.
Absolutely. You know, I had a chance to just flip through it, but I haven't used it yet. We had a copy at the office that we were circulating. I work from Catholic News Agency's offices, and they were planning to do some cooking together, some of the recipes of this book and blog on it and that kind of thing. So I got a chance to flip through it. It's a beautiful book. It's got really beautiful photos. And apparently it says stuff like, what is Pope Francis's favorite meal and Pope Benedict's favorite meal and those kind of things. And so it's same with me. It's a book I want to pick up and really use to learn a little bit, perhaps, but also just to have some fun.
So, Jeanette, did you find out what are their favorite meals?
You know what? I don't have it in front of me, so I wish I would have written that down, but I don't have it in front of me, so we'll have to point people to this article.
That's a good teaser. That's
it is a good.
You know, a lot of people are going to want to get that book and find out.
We will have to talk more about it, but I'll give people a chance to read it first. Patty, thanks so much for being with us and for talking about such a very human topic, but one that can really help us to grow in relationship and even deeper with our Lord. So thanks for writing this piece and for talking about it today.
Oh, you're welcome. You may be, now I want to go cook a good meal for dinner.
Me too.
I've been inspired.
God bless you, Patty.
Okay, thank you. God bless you too.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com or ewtnradio.net. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.